This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm Capriato here, bringing you part three of our leadership series with Mike Davidson, who's a shop owner and a John Maxwell certified teacher, trainer, and coach. This five-part leadership series is meant to motivate, inspire, and hopefully bring new processes to light that you can implement into your business and role as a leader. Use each episode to create your own leadership map and goals. Now, Mike Davidson breaks down the most important aspects of leadership to make it easy for anyone to understand and implement. In this episode, we discuss creating a leadership growth environment. Hey, thanks to Apex and Shopware for sponsoring this episode. With registration now open for Apex 2021 in Las Vegas, you can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. Can't wait to reconnect with all of you in person. Remember, homecoming time, November 2nd through the 4th. Be there. Register now at AAPEXshow.com. And when was the last time you ordered something online? Well, like a burger from Grubhub, your groceries from Amazon. How about things that are really high-tech, like auto repair? Well, Shopware's online interactive repair orders lets you do just that. Check it out for yourself on the web at GetShopware.com. Hey, listen to Mike Davidson's previous episodes with me on this leadership series. Just key in Mike Davidson on any search bar on my website, remarkableresults.biz, and catch up on one of your most important personal attributes, and that would be leadership. Hey, warm welcome to Mike Davidson. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey, good to have you here, my friend. John Maxwell, certified teacher, trainer, coach, also the company Industry Essentials. Got a great apprentice program, written a lot of books, and of course, Parkway Automotive. I don't know, you're a busy guy.
I seem to stay that way. My wife and I were talking about retirement. I think it's called rehirement for me. I don't know. I'll just do something else. I don't think retirement's actually in my future, in my DNA. I should say it that way.
Same with me, Mike. And, you know, I always say Colonel Sanders started late and he kept going. So that's the deal. Hey, Mike and I are doing a five-part leadership series, and we are in part three, yet this part three will have two parts, right, Mike?
Yes, it will. Part three and then part four will be part one and part two.
Yeah, listen, if we've got great leaders listening to this show, and I know we do, they'll understand.
They will. They'll understand perfectly. Yeah.
So we're here to talk about creating a leadership growth environment in your part one. And there's five lessons, and there will be another five in the next part. I just can't wait to jump in. This has been a great series so far, and I appreciate you coming here and doing that for us, because as I've said in the past, we know we have to be better leaders, but you know, we go out and read a book, but you know, how do you start and what do you do? And I think these lessons have been just critical for us to learn to be better leaders. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome, Carl. I'm glad to be a part of it. I've been just so committed over the last several years, probably go back to 2010 if I went back that far, and my commitment to growing in leadership, you know, once I came to realize it was a thing. You know, we mentioned that in the first podcast. It's like it's a thing, and it's something that I needed to learn about, and learning is one thing. That's knowledge, right? But wisdom comes when you apply the knowledge.
Yeah. Hey, well, let's jump into this thing. Lesson one in this third part is about hiring.
The whole environment that takes place within your business, it is a process. And it is not one thing that you can do and like, suddenly I'm the leader or I have a leadership environment. There are a multiplicity of things that have to be in place. And so when I began to put this together, actually before we even talked about having a podcast about what are the things that absolutely need to be in place in an automotive repair facility in order for a leadership environment to take place. Because one thing for sure, if a person is bent toward growth or understands their need to grow, and they're not in an environment where that can take place, they're going to leave.
Or they're going to hang around and not give a damn.
Yeah, I say it this way, too. When it comes to high performers like working with high performers. And if you as the shop owner allow low performers to not grow in their role to become high performers, or you have employees who choose not to be a part, you know, they're either unwilling or unable, right? Those two things. It's always one of those two things. then your high performers are going to leave you. They're just going to. And I can't say that I would blame them. You know, who wants to work around a bunch of turkeys, right? As they say.
What's your secret to identifying people ahead of time?
It really comes down to the very first lesson that I really thought through, and it actually goes all the way back like years and years ago when I asked an insurance company. I said, "How do I keep my insurance rates low?" And he says, "It all depends on the people you hire." And so I went and did whatever it is I was supposed to do at that time. But it was around 2010 that I really understood the role that every individual plays in this business and how important it was that I hire people that would fit a culture that I was trying to build. And so, and I think everyone would understand that. So, you know, we understand the importance of culture. We talk a lot about that. You and I do, and others in the industry do. But it's important to have a hiring process in place that actually develops that. So I went through a series of training with a guy that learned how to hire. I learned how Chick-fil-A hires. I learned how Southwest Airlines hires. I learned how Container Store hired. And so I spent this year long time of study and how could I get better at hiring people. And so I developed making it a seminar that I've been able to teach in different places. It's called Hiring for Keeps, where I'm teaching shops how to hire. But this is so simple. This is so essential. No pun intended on industry essentials, but it is an essential industry part that you learn how to hire people. And you learn how to ask questions that will allow you to learn of whether or not they fit your culture. Because one thing we know. I'll just say it this way. If you can learn how someone's behavior is in the past in certain circumstances through your questions, you can count on that that's going to be their behavior in the future. So when they're coming to work for you, you discovering how they behave in the past is part of that interview process to determine that. You also should be using as many people in your organization as possible as it feasibly makes sense to. For the hiring, not that they have to be like the official, but I use my technicians, I use my service advisor, I use my office manager, I use my shuttle drivers. They all are a part of the interview process of at least meeting someone and having conversation. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all relationships. So a person's ability to engage and interact is a part of our culture at our company that we have to be able to talk to each other. We don't want anyone living on an island and being isolated. And they just sort of go away. We want them to be able to talk and engage. And so we're just discovering that between employees. I mean, it's we can teach skill, but we want to see if they can adapt to our culture, which is a very engaging, a very talkative culture that we have. You've got to be able to determine if that person has the ability that if you shift some leadership responsibilities over to that person, how can they handle that or can they handle that? How have they handled that kind of situation in the past? So asking questions that will help them do that. You know, a question I love to ask is, tell me about a time when someone wronged you is a great question. And just listen to their answer. Or tell me about a time when you were given an assignment that was outside your role.
You're stating something so big and so powerful. Some of the listeners may just disagree with you because don't too many of us sell when we're in an interview? Aren't we, instead of being a great listener, we're being the salesperson because we're so desperate for someone that we do this and you'll like this instead of stopping, asking questions and listening. I mean, you could sell later in the interviewing process, but in the first interview, isn't it time to really learn? Should there be a second interview?
We actually go through a pre-screen and then the job application is processed once we receive it back, then a two-hour interview with us, and then another two-hour interview with all the employees where they walk around and ask all the employees. And then we all meet together as a group and decide if we think that person's the right, who we think the best fit for our culture is of the candidates. And then we send them over a job offer. But I think part of it is making sure the candidate really understands that these are two people making a decision, not one. It's not me making a decision about you. It's you also making a decision about us. And we only get to know you for a few hours, and you've known yourself your whole life. And you have to determine, we're going to try to give you as much information as we can about our company and our culture. You're going to get to meet all the employees. And you've got to do a really good job of asking questions on your own to determine if this is the right place for you. So we really put a lot of a weight, if you will, onto that prospective employee, that they have a responsibility to help both of us make a good decision. And then we do report cards by the other employees on the new employee at 30, 60, and 90 days. And we sit down and have a conversation with them about those report cards.
Hire slow, fire fast. That's the whole process.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And so that's lesson one is hiring. That's so important. And job one in creating this leadership environment. Who you hire matters. And you want people that are willing and able to learn new skills and to grow in their role. And that's what you're after. So the second thing that is important, and this goes back to even things we've already talked about, is job descriptions. You know, you remember the story I give you about washing the truck. Well, you know, if you don't have a job description, then you're going to be washing a lot of trucks a long time. You need that job description as that document. It keeps you consistent as an owner, and it keeps them consistent as an employee. And it's also that place where you can put down in writing your clear expectations of them to grow, whether it's in training, in learning the job, the things that they need to understand and know over whatever period of time. A job description is always a moving target. It's never really completed. And it's seldom should you expect an employee to walk in on day one and be able to fulfill that job description. They should understand that it too is a learning process. I think it takes a year to learn a job at any location. I don't care how much experience you've got. You walk into a different culture or a different facility. Maybe there's some things you can grasp that you bring with you, but it's a year before you are fully settled in and are doing the job that you need to be able to do, no matter what it is.
You know, so many people just put the job description in front of someone. They may have never gone over it in the interview. And then the person comes in to sign all their papers and they just look over the bullet points and they sign something. They probably never get a copy of it to put, you know, in their world, in their drawer, in their box or somewhere. And to your point about the evolution and the ever-changing JD, I love to call job descriptions JD. That's always been my favorite acronym for job descriptions. But Mike, if my culture was changing and my commitment to training was changing and I wanted my technicians to have X amount of hours a year in training, I would build a brand new job description and let them re-sign it and get it to them and talk about it. Would you agree that because that's ever-evolving?
Yes, you do. And then you also make that a part of their compensation package because you always reward the behavior you're looking for. And so that's part of your role as a leader. And I think within the job description, you get the opportunity to give them in that job description an opportunity to see if they actually can lead, if you can trust them with things. I think about in the job descriptions for Parkway, the ability to solve problems, right, and be able to interact with customers. You know, when it comes to having these difficult situations or circumstances with customers, I'll tell you, the person who's best able to make the right decision for the company and the customer is not the owner. It's the service advisor. And the reason I say that is because he has all the information. He knows every conversation. He knows the tone and inflection that he gave and that the customer gave. And you can never transfer that information over to the owner. And the owner, more times than not, will make the wrong decision about that. They either lose the customer and the money, you know, both.
The service advisor would be the smartest person to make a to solve a problem for a customer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes, they do. And so within that job description, you're giving them, and we talk about this in a moment about latitude, but you know, for instance, we give them money that they can spend on every customer and never ask the owner a single question. You know, whatever amount of money that you're comfortable with. I when I started doing that in 2010, it was $50. Now it's $200. And so it just gives them that opportunity. And you know, one of the things that I got a really great compliment from Andy Pickering. So on the Industry Essentials website, not trying to promote that, but just to let people know that I have job descriptions that under wage and hour that have certain words in there that the Department of Labor want to see in a job description, by the way. But if you wanted a very comprehensive job description that Randy Pickering said is very comprehensive, then you could take that and it's in a Word document, download it, and you can make it your own. I don't care. It's all there for you.
How kind. How kind. Thank you.
And it's for every role in our industry. Service advisor, technician, facility maintenance, shuttle driver, office manager, they're all there. And after I spent a year with Wage and Hour learning that the job description played a role in their audits, I learned that there were some things that I needed to be included in there. So I just bold printed everything in those job descriptions that says the Department of Labor is going to be looking for these things. So you want to be sure to include them, and then you can change whatever else you want.
The website, industryessentials.com, .net?
It's .net, industryessentials.net. You click on Wage and Hour, yeah, and you'll find them. So these job descriptions, it allows you to write in that job description the type of authority, you know, that you want to give an employee. And the worst thing you can do as the leader of the company is to give someone responsibility and no authority. You're giving them responsibility to satisfy customers, but you give them no authority to satisfy customers. You got to give them both.
Yeah, it's like, take care of the customer, but let me know what you did before you can do it. Yes, I mean, that would be the, it's that trust piece. I remember reading a book by John DeJulius, The Relationship Economy, and he tells a great story about a company that ruined a dress or a jacket of one of their clients, and he agreed, with sight unseen, to spend the money to buy a brand new one for the client. I think it cost him $250-$300. That person, they have been able to track that person ever sent new clients referrals. They never did. He spent that money to right the wrong, and that person referred 18 new clients to them over the course of the next year. And he looked at that money that he spent as, you know, the smartest investment that he ever made in gaining new customers. So to your point, Mike, there is a do-right rule that is part of the business culture.
Yeah, it is. And I think one of the positions that service advisors put owners in is they have this something happen and take place. And they bring that, you know, the owner's got to be, the owner actually puts himself in this position, right? Because they're not giving them that authority. And they feel like they've got to bring the owner in to get permission to do something that they probably already know what the right thing to do is. And then to try to transfer all that information from one human being to another is very difficult, if not impossible, especially with all the other things that an owner may have to do. He needs to trust you as a service advisor to make the decision, a good decision on behalf of the company, the customer, and the employees. Now, I'll tell you, one of the rules that guidelines that I've given my advisors when you're making decisions. First, it's got to follow our mission statement, which is to provide ethical, reliable service to the motoring public. That's part of our mission statement. And then secondly, you need to make sure it benefits two of at least three entities. And I just mentioned them. That's the customer, that's the employee, and the company. If any decision you make only benefits one of those and not at least two, you're making the wrong decision.
Thank you for bringing job descriptions and then taking, you know, some liberties to expand upon that. That's great, Mike. Lesson two, job descriptions.
Yeah, so the third thing as we talk about is latitude. It's giving employees enough latitude to actually make a decision. And what happens is when you do that, you get to sit back and watch them develop as decision makers instead of coming to you all the time for the decision and only following your lead. And those are potential leaders in your organization if you give them the latitude to make decision and you sit back and watch and see what they do. So one example that I would give you of that is some years ago, I gave each of my advisors money in a bank account that they could use to buy and sell used cars. So they had to start making decisions about buying a car, and we only buy a car in an effort to produce work for the shop. We don't buy it just to buy it. It's going to be a car that we know, a car that we have inspections on, a car that we've done work on, you know, these sort of things. And your only responsibility is to be profitable. You know, that's what you need to do with this money. And so it allowed me to sit back and watch their decision-making process with the numbers instead, because before that time, you know, it was coming to Mike. Hey, Mike, should we buy this car? Well, heck, I don't know. Should we buy this car? I don't know nothing about it. It's, you know, it's a red 67 Volkswagen. I have no idea. Probably not. Again, you can't know everything and you need them. And I say it this way. When we think about building our businesses as leadership development companies that happens to sell automotive service, and latitude has to be a part of that. giving those employees latitude to make decisions on their own and watch them and then coach them with decisions. Always stand behind every decision they make. Coach them on the ones that you think were wrong or they needed help with. You pull them aside and talk to them about that. But whatever decision they make, you just support it.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, find out what it means to be a river, not a reservoir, as a leader. With registration now open for Apex 2021 in Las Vegas, you can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. Hey, I can't wait to reconnect with all of you in person and share stories of our time apart, both personal and professional. I also can't wait to sit in on the technical and business management training that was designed and is specifically for you, the service professional. Now, with more than 20 sessions, you'll hear from the best of the best, including Guy Vesco, who will lead a session on hybrid and EV high voltage systems, and Greg Bunch, an expert on mastering the art of trust-based selling. Hey, make sure to also experience the new Repair Shop HQ in Joe's Garage. It's designed with you in mind. And visit the show floor to see many new products and emerging technologies. The dates again, November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Be there. Register now. AAPEXshow.com. I want to let you in on a little secret. Investing in a cloud-based shop management system could be the smartest purchase you make in 2021. Manual processes can really add up and cost your shop unnecessary time and money. Now, if you're writing out repair orders, you're wasting time. If you're chasing customers for approvals, you're wasting time. If you're manually calculating invoices or logging into multiple systems, you're wasting time. And if you're wasting time, well, then you're wasting money. Do me a favor, pull up Chrome, Safari, or whatever browser you use and type in getshopware.com. Click on the Book a Demo button in the upper right corner and check out Shopware's amazingly efficient software. Trust me, you won't regret it. Again, that's getshopware.com. Let me ask you this question. Oh, thanks for the money. I'll buy a car. What if I make the wrong decision? You know, someone may never make a decision because they don't want to fail. So how do you coach them through that? I know you're going to make a mistake or two. I mean, what do you do?
First, not making a decision is a decision, right? So it's not a decision. You are making a decision. It's really just stepping back and looking at the facts. You can ask for counsel. You can ask for others. I mean, one of the great things about having multiple advisors, say, hey, I've got this car that looks like we could buy. Here's what I think's wrong with it. Guys, what do y'all think we could sell this for? You got any customers that'd be interested in buying that car? Or you always look up the value of the car through the different mediums that are available online, all of that. And so it's them being able to see them when they don't know the answer to a question. This is part of the interview process, right? Have you ever tell me about a time where you had to complete a task that you didn't have the knowledge to complete? Okay, so this would be an example of that. So how would they handle that situation? They should be going to other people and asking for counsel. They should be seeking out help. They should be doing research. They should find out what they need. And it doesn't need to be you as the owner. It needs to be the other people in and around them, their peers, to find out the answer to those questions. And so my question to them in that case, I would just simply ask them, well, tell me what you have found out about it. Tell me, what are the numbers? What do the numbers look like on buying that car?
Or if they aren't sure and they're kind of teeter-tottering between a decision, if they come to you, Mike, you're probably not going to give a decision. You're going to say, okay, tell me what I should know. Tell me what you know. And then tell me what your decision is. That circumstance may help them hone their decision-making process, but you can't do all the work. They've got to do 90% of the work.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Carm. It's just getting them to make a decision and then let them see the results of that decision. It's a great example of just helping them do that. I like to say it this way, too, is don't tell them what to think. Help them to think. Fourth thing, and of course, a lot of these could go a lot deeper than this, than what we're able to cover in a 30-minute podcast, but that is developing leaders. You need to maintain your skills as a leader to lead others in their leadership. So you, as a leader, have to maintain your skills. Don't rely on your own past experiences and knowledge. You must continue to grow as a leader yourself. And I say it this way, to think of yourself as a river, not a reservoir, when it comes to training your people in the roles of leaders. it's important for you to be trained so that you can help train others to be leaders. So becoming a better leader yourself, it's really what I would call just self-development. What books are you reading and what classes are you attending? Who's holding you accountable? Is there someone in your life that you can talk to help in your area of really of personal growth? I came to this place some years ago when I walked out of my office and I said to all my advisors, and I said, I am no longer going to carry the burden of this company alone anymore. And I walked back in my office, and I'm sure they shook their head and go, what was that? You know, because that was a very non-leadership way of introducing the idea that I'm going to grow you as leaders. And so what we ended up doing, as I came to that place, making them aware that there's a burden here to be carried, and we're all in this together to carry this burden. Many times as an owner, we just want someone else to take some action that, like you even said, like make decisions. And why can't they think of that on their own? But once you start taking some small steps for yourself, develop yourself, your leadership, I will tell you that others will follow. And so it's about you being focused as an owner of a company to grow in your role as a leader. And we even said this in the second one, in the second podcast, we said what they see is what they'll be. And so think about growing your own personal growth and leadership, and others will follow that.
I want some clarity on be a river, not a reservoir. And when you say be a river, is that your own personal, you want to be on the river of learning all the time? Or did you mean in this whole reservoir thing where people would come to you for answers, you're the reservoir of knowledge? Help me understand that.
Yeah. So that was a quote by Stephen Covey. And what Stephen means by that is that as you learn information, as you learn how to be a leader, share how to be a leader with others. Don't just hold on to it as if you're a reservoir. You want to be a river. You want it flowing through you and to you. Be a teacher on leadership. And that flows over into people's personal lives too. And now you're really starting to help people impact their life as a whole when you're growing as a leader and then they're growing as a leader. And I'll tell you the simple rule about leadership is and your personal growth, we'll say it that way, your personal growth is having a process in place for personal growth. And that's one of the things that John Maxwell teaches and that I teach is how important it is to have a process in place that growth actually takes place. It doesn't go poof and, you know, it grow. It's not like when you and I are born, right? And our ears grow, our body grows, our head grows, you know, these physical things take place. That's not what happens when it comes to personal internal growth. External growth happens because we were created that way and we grow to a point. Internal growth takes place with intentionality. And a part of that intentionality that I teach is how you're to be aware and how you're to look in the mirror and how you're to seek out advice from others to learn about yourself more and learn how to ask great questions of others so that you can discover yourself more. That's leadership.
You know, Mike, to your point about, you know, a short podcast and bringing up all these things, first of all, thank you so much for doing these. And there is no way that you expect to my listener here that you're going to listen to this 5 podcast series with Mike on leadership and, oh, at the end of the 5th one, you're a leader. And the reason that I wanted to do this is I wanted to motivate a lot of people to hone their leadership skills and or to realize the importance of it in leading their company and leading their team and leading their department. But you got to read. You got to go to classes. You got to find a mentor. You have to do networking, all to hone your leadership skills. And as you learn to become a leader, Mike, tell me if I'm right or wrong, you're going to fail forward, which is one of John Maxwell's books that I loved. So, oh my God, it's okay to fail and learn this stuff. That's the key to this thing. Hopefully, these podcasts are going to motivate you to go to the next level.
Yes, it's like taking that first step, Carm. And so the story and how the Toyota Prius was built. The Toyota Prius was built. They developed 3 teams within the Toyota organization. And so one team said, well, we're going to spend time thinking about how this Prius ought to be built. And the second team says, we are going to work to perfection before we present our plan to the powers that be. And the third team says, we're just going to get started. And so when it came time to talk to the powers that be, the one team says, well, we're really still thinking about exactly how this Prius thing ought to go and how it ought to be built. And the second team says, well, we're working on perfecting it. We're going to produce the perfect hybrid vehicle. And the third team says, well, here's what we got. And it was the ugliest Prius like ever built, right? It's the ugliest car. Well, guess which team won? It's the one that started to work and got the third, that's the third team. And so for you as a leader, start working, start taking those steps moving forward. As you said, fail forward. And you will learn a lot more as you grow. Growing is learning. And John Maxwell says that there's learning and there's success and there's learning. So I don't want to misquote John. I'd be in trouble. I'd probably get a bad grade. So there's learning. You know, so there's success and there's learning. All right. So that's it.
I got it. Thank you so much for that. And to help summarize this, this number three podcast in the leadership series, which is really part one of a 10-part series on leadership growth, lesson five, small team development. I love that.
Yeah, probably the biggest move I ever made that helped people develop teams within my organization. So I'll just go back to when I started it all, when I started doing this, 2014 or 15, I think it was. I read the book, The Toyota Way, and I learned about teams within their large organization, right? I thought, well, why can't I do that here? So I now have one service advisor who's assigned to two technicians, and they work together as a team. Now, I'm not talking about they just come in and clock in. Don't be confused with what you may have heard from the dealership teams. It's not that at all. None of that. Within the team system, you have a person, which is generally the leader, which is generally the service advisor, and he's in charge of keeping those two guys busy all day long. That's his job, just those two guys. All right. So he's not trying to, I don't have three guys trying to keep six people busy. I have three guys, each one of them having two guys they try to keep busy. But they also do their own meetings together. They have to leave the office and go to a lunch meeting at least once a month. And they are there to solve their own problems. And within that round table, within that discussion, two people tell one person the area they'd like to see the other improve upon. So it's just a little round table of just three people. And they are outside of that part of the meeting. They can have one, not more than two subjects to talk about in a meeting, because that's how much time they're allotted to solve problems. But they are there to solve their own problems. And so giving them that authority and responsibility to solve their own problems has been the biggest thing that's kept me out of meetings. I mean, outside of the COVID meetings we had once a week last year, I have not had to attend meetings of my company in years, because they're solving their own problems, and that grows them in their leadership within these small teams, within the larger team. They set their own appointments for their team. They schedule all their work. They manage everything for those two guys. And what happens by going through the DISC test as well, it helped them read each other's DISC within the small team, and they've learned how to communicate with each other through the DISC assessment. And so now this team just keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger, because they know each other so well. They're IMs. They can say something to each other, or their communication on the phone or in person. The communication level is much, much higher because of making them a team of small people within a larger team.
How do you know this? Because I know you're not there every day. So how do you know that those teams are as congealed as you say?
Well, because the third book I have is Technician Time Management, I just see the numbers and I can tell you if my team is doing what they're supposed to be doing or not, if they're having issues or you know, getting along. I mean, and I do come in and talk to them, Carm. I do go in.
The quality of the meetings. I mean, does your service advisor, has the service advisor read the books you've wanted him to read and strives to be a better leader of that team?
Yes, I have a couple of advisors right now that are enrolled in my leadership training that I do, and we're going to be rotating all the employees out through. I have four technicians are enrolled in leadership, and so we're constantly helping them grow in their role as leaders. And yes, they have books to read, and and you know, things like that. But I think giving them that position where they felt the responsibility to solve their own problems, as, and that they weren't trying to solve, one advisor wasn't trying to solve the problems of 17 people. It's just him and two other people. There's so much that gets solved.
It sounds like a great idea, Mike, that it's tiny, it's manageable. I mean, I talk to a lot of people that are leaders, and I say, how many direct reports do you have? Knowing the size of the company that they work for, and they say eight, and I say, wow, how do you deal with that? You know, although I know some vice presidents may have, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 reports, depending on, you know, everybody's companies are downsizing and stuff. I think it's, yeah, how do you spend time? How do you do performance reviews is often with that many people over a big distance. And even though it's a small, single location operation like you have, I see the huge benefit of this small team environment. And think about the multi-shop owners that have, you know, that could apply this to the multi-store units.
It's probably the single biggest decision I made that helped me become an absentee owner at the level that I am today. Everyone's fulfilling their role. I mean, they are. It's been fun to watch.
This is great. I love it. We are not going to teach people how to be great leaders in a podcast, but we're going to motivate them, Mike, to do something about it, to follow some of your principles, to click with a really cool idea and say, oh my God, I can do that small team thing. It's a great place to start. Yet, oh, my job description, I could really work on that. Give my people some opportunity to fail. Learn as much as I can and then give it to my people. Oh, I love it. This was a great, great episode. Now we're going to come back. We're going to do podcast number 4, which is a continuing part of this growth environment. You have 5 more lessons to give us. Any final words on this one?
Every single lesson that we talked about today, these five lessons, within each one is a smaller process that actually causes it to be intentional. Without a process, intentionality does not occur. And so it's breaking these down into each one of these lessons to go, okay, how do I do this? How do I build that job description to say what I need it to say for people to do what I'm doing when I'm not here?
On our 5th episode, can we carve out some time to tell our audience what books they should read?
Yes, I will. And I have been challenged with that. And even the leadership that I'm teaching now is Mike's books. And so I will have that ready because I'm actually working on that list now. So I will absolutely have it ready of books for shop owners to read and take a hold of.
I love it. Mike's books. And everyone knows on my website, I have a books page. And every time we mention a book on the podcast, I go and pop it up there. So if anyone says, hey, what were they talking about? And you can actually click and it goes to Amazon. You could actually pick up the book or the audio book or whatever. Mike Davidson, thank you so much on this third part of the leadership series, a John Maxwell certified teacher, trainer, and coach from Industry Essentials, and of course, the owner of Parkway Automotive. Thanks, my friend.
Yeah, you're welcome, Carm. I really do hope to bring the Maxwell method of leadership to the automotive industry. That is my heart. That's what I want to bring.
You would be the best to give it. Thank you, man.
Yeah, you bet, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.